Okay, I just want to speak on my mind a few topics that are just currently, some are more personal, some are more seasonal, happens every single year. I'll just tell you what they are, and then I'll try to address them and hopefully leave with a message that will be something that we can all grow from. First thing is obviously this point of the year. Any Rebbe who goes through this process, all the Rebbeim in the yeshiva, we do this every single year. This is the final part of the biggest stretch of the year. We have Chorev Zman, and this is the longest Chorev Zman, with an extra month. Some of you guys might be already exhausted, and in many years this would be the end actually of the Zman, because if it wasn't an extra leap year, it wasn't an extra month, then we'd be finishing up in the next few days, which is frightening for many of us. But it's not. There's an extra month to go. This last month is the month that you're going to be leaving the yeshiva with. It's the month that will have perm in it. Many of you will be going afterwards to Poland. It's the month that you'll be spending in yeshiva leading up to Pesach. This month is so crucial to the next stage that for the Rebbeim in this room right now, it's a very scary thought. Because you don't yet know how important it's going to be for the rest of your year. One thing in my mind. It's recruiting season. As many of you already know, the Rebbeim may have asked you to make some phone calls, reach out to people. The Rebbeim may be missing for stretches of a time. This is a time of year that, for many people in the yeshiva, you know, there's a lot of, distractions. We'd like to be nowhere but here with you. I wish we'd never had to travel to the States to recruit students, even though last year you were those that we were recruiting. I wish we didn't have to make phone calls, but that's the nature of the beast, unfortunately. That's also in my mind a little bit. I have a number of stories I want to share with you of some recent trips that I had that are some disturbing, some funny, mostly disturbing though. Perm is around the corner. 2 weeks, a little bit from now, you will see many people in different states of dress, of consciousness, not only in this room, but in the entire country. It's a very unusual time. A lot of flashbacks we have of people in the yeshiva, different costumes that they had that we have nightmares about to this day, at least I do. What to talk about? The final piece is much more personal to me, and I'll try to keep my emotions as stable as possible. If I get emotional at all, you'll bear with me. So my grandmother is unfortunately very sick. So it could be any day now I'll go home and not home. This is my home. I'll go to my parents to officiate a funeral, and I just want to share with you some thoughts that are going in my mind right now from my mom, it's her mother. Which told me recently about my grandmother. I just want to share with you also, just to kind of put things, I don't want to get too depressing, that's not my intention here, but kind of put things in a little bit more of a morbid and serious perspective, especially because we're going to be going into Adar, which is a lot of simcha. It should be a simcha that's not a simcha of wholeness, a simcha of frivolities, but a simcha of the opportunities that are among us being alive in general, and certainly in this point of year, in our yeshiva experience. Where are we holding right now? Where are we holding? The Parshas Pekudei, which we're holding right now as far as the Parshios go, Rav Moshe Feinstein has a very, very important idea that I think something we don't think about enough. And I think that if you take this part very seriously, the rest of your year, month, year, life has a different feel to it. Elip Pekudei, these are the counts. Chazal say that Moshe Rabbeinu was being accused by the Leitzanei Hador. Here he is, he's collecting all the money for the Mishkan, and they turn around and they see he's got a lot of money. He seems to be very wealthy right now. Now, what they didn't realize is that, according to the Medrash, that he had been given a gift by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that the psalacha, the luchos that he was engraving, were very, very, very precious, of precious material. And he was able to keep his luchos, and he made a lot of money, quote-unquote, in the process. But all they saw is that while they were leaving Mitzrayim, they're all taking cash from their neighbors. They're taking the loot that came through Kriyas Yamsuf and the Mishnah's been dying. And Moshe's busy taking Yosef's bones. He didn't have much money. Next thing they know, they're donating money to the Mishkan, and Moshe Rabbeinu seems to be getting richer and richer. And they start to accuse Moshe Rabbeinu of having kind of snuck a little bit in his pocket. So Moshe does a Pekudei, he does an accounting. He makes a count, and he gives an inventory to every dollar, every cent, every shekel he received, and where it went to in the Mishkan. That's the beginning part. We have the inventory of the Mishkan. says Moshe Feinstein in the Sefer called Drash Moshe. The point of this is that you have to do Tzarech Ha'adam Lasos Cheshbon Al Kol Davar Shenasan L'Hashem Yisbarach. We too must make a cheshbon. You have to keep account of whatever God gives you. Bein Al Zman HaChayim, your life. You have to have account for your days of your life. The Chafetz Chaim, we're told, used to every single year would sit down in a room alone, keeping an inventory of his year. There was one year when his family couldn't find him to get ready to go to shul, and they finally found him back in his office, in his Beis Medrash. And he was like, kind of like the pencil and pen scratching his head. He's, what's wrong? What's wrong? I can't figure out where 18 minutes of my year went. 18 minutes he couldn't track down of his year. How about we could track down 18 minutes of our year? That's what it means to have a count. You're aware of what you do with your life. It's a currency. If you had $100,000, and then next thing you know, you only have $20,000, wouldn't you want to know where $80,000 of them went? You have X amount of moments in your day. When you go to bed at nighttime, don't you want to know where your day went? Were you successful today in what you tried to do? And if not, how can I get better maybe? Account. What do you do with your precious time that Hashem set aside for you? Again, obviously, when you're talking about death and people near death, it's much more serious. But you don't want to wait until that happens to start accounting for your time. If you wait until it's too late, you just start kind of being sad of what you didn't take advantage of. But you can't do anything about it. When you're 90-some-odd years old, and you look back on your life, you can't make up anymore. You can't run to the grocery store, and you can't volunteer for the Chesed Olam. You can't do those things. If you don't keep track of it right now, then later on in life, when you reflect on your life, it's just about the regrets of what you can't do, of what you didn't do, and what you can't do anymore. Moshe says, take account. Did you take your time and sanctify them for Torah and mitzvahs? Or maybe you just wasted it. Bein al shefa parnasa, the money you were given, you were gifted by God money. You think it's because you're so smart? A lot of smart people have not a lot of money. Business ventures just didn't work. The person they invested with, you know, scammed them. You were gifted by God with money. What'd you do with your money? Afal tzedakah. How do you spend your charity? What are you giving? Do you give charity? What are you giving it towards? Shlo yachshov ha'adam, do not think, says Moshe, ki mash nasan lo shem yisbarach yechol tos k'mash rotsa. Don't think whatever God gives you, you can do whatever you want with. It's my life, right? I can do whatever I want. It's my life. It's my currency. It's my time. It's not correct at all. So Moshe finally says, b'kudei means you're obligated to keep track of yourself, of your time, of your money, of your value system. And by not doing so, then it's a waste. I was on the phone with a parent last night, not a parent of one of you, but a parent of a future potential student. He said to me the following line. It was unbelievable what he said. He goes to me, Rabbi, I want my son to go somewhere where he changes. He goes, unlike so many other parents who want their son to come back just as they came, no extra chumrah, no different decision they have in their lives now. Usually I want them back. He says, I want my son to change. And he starts to reflect, who do I know that went from my son's school to your yeshiva? How did they change? How many parents look around at how many kids don't change, at least not too much? That's where I want my son to go. I was shocked at his interest. And then I realized at that point in time how unusual it was. That's why I was so shocked about it. How many of us come here to change? I want to be more religious when I finish. There are so many people in an interview. I said, what are your goals for the year? And many of you people were involved in this question when I met you a year ago or 2 years ago. A lot of people say to me, I want to get better in learning, but not change. You're so perfect. So perfect. I don't want to change. I just want to be smarter. Be smarter, but the same person I am right now. When a parent, this parent were here that, he'd be like, why don't my son to go to yeshiva when he's not changing? to not second guess yourself for what you decided when you were in high school? You don't second guess yourself at all? You were so clear when you were 16, 17 years old. Such great decisions you had in mind, you really had well thought out. You don't think about different things then? I would never want my son to go to a place and to get back the same kid I got. Give my money back. I send you somewhere to change. That's what he said to me. I was like shocked because no one says that. So few kids say that to me on an interview. No parent ever said to me when I meet a parent, a change? My house has to look differently now? That's not what I'm in. I'm not in for that. I'm not signing up for that at all. How do we have change? How does one go through change? So I'm doing Mishnah Yomi, little plug. It's not meant to be a T4, but I'm doing Mishnah Yomi. And today's Mishnah was Mamash. This morning I was looking at Shul, and it's like this point. The Mishnah brings down, and Bava Basra, I think the 10th Mishnah in the 5th Perek. And it says that when you have weights and measures, you have to clean them every so often, depending how often you use them. The more you use your weights and measures, like if you were selling, if I was a chenvani, if I'm a store, I'm selling you things based on weights and measures, I must clean it X amount of times a week, pretty often, because I'm using them a lot. If you use this body a lot, you have to do a lot of checking on yourself. Is this right? Is this wrong? Did I do good? Did I not do good today? The more you use it, the more you're involved, the more it requires checks and balances. How many people in this room check and balance yourself? Where's your cheshbon nefesh? You go to bed at nighttime? Do you go through your day? Do you have as a mom when you sit alone in a room with a piece of paper and a pen and mark down, how did I do today? Did I go to davening? Did I do well in davening? How's my lashon hara? How's my language that I use? Did I look at the right things today? So I respect with my Rebbe. A whole list of things you can make for yourself. How many people in this room make a cheshbon nefesh? And if not, why not? Do you not use your body enough? Are you not like a chenvani for your body? Of course you are. You're more than that. You use your body all the time. Where's checks and balances? The Ramchal brings down Mesilas Yesharim. He says you have two ways to check and balance. Number one, in advance, what's considered good and what's considered bad. Remember me, an action. And number two, what I just did, was it good or was it bad? I think a lot of us would disagree on what's considered good and what's considered bad. Forget about even if I did good or bad. If I would paint a picture of a day for you, wake up in the morning, you go to davening, you go to breakfast, you make brachas in the food, you hopefully you remember to make a bracha achron as well. You went back to your room, you took a little nap, 45 minutes later you go to the Beis Medrash, you schmooze about whatever topic it is, it's on your mind for the time being, you learn for an hour, go to shir afterwards, you walk after 20 minutes, have your break time, your intense games on your phone for the next 2 hours until the next part of the Seder goes. How was your morning? Good? Well, I didn't kill anybody. If I'm keeping the 7 Noachai laws, I kept them all. Pretty good. That's bad. It's actually bad. It's a bad job that morning. It's called a waste of most of your time. A waste of most of it. That's not good. Could you imagine if you were, instead of it being your time, it was your money? You invested. You invested in X amount, you know, a third of your day. A third of your money you invested. And that third, you actually succeeded in your investments in a quarter of them. Right? Now, you didn't lose all of it. That's not good. It's actually bad. That's a bad investment. If you were having a job and that was the person's money you were investing, you'd be fired for your job. It's a bad job. Not a good job. If you have checks and balances in your life that you care how you do, then you would be bothered by your lack of successes. The Medrash says, and I'll just read a small part of it, though it's a very long Medrash. For a person is born in the world, Hashem takes your neshama, He takes your ruach, and He brings it. And He gives it a charge. He says, right now I'm going to place you into a body, or into a building body, in a womb. And the neshama doesn't want to go, doesn't want to leave. And it says, the Kabbalah says to them, listen, that's your job. Your job is to go. And you're here for X amount of time in the world. It's your job. I'll provide for you while you're in the womb. I will be there with you in the womb. But then when you leave the womb, you will forget all about me. Hashem says to Neshama. But before I leave and send you down, I'm going to take you around the Olam HaEmes and show you what's out there for you in the future. These tzaddikim over here, they kept Torah, they kept the mitzvahs and learned Torah. These people down here, they didn't do that. Just understand what you're heading towards right now. Take advantage of your time, and then with that, off you go. And then you're born and you forget it all. And we're on a journey right now. We're on a journey. That journey has many stages. How do you identify yourself? Are you Jewish? Is that your main identity? Just, you know, a male, if that's your currently identity. The choice that you all have, by the way, that's your choices. Can tell how you want to do that. What am I identifying? What's my tudat zehut? How am I looking at myself right now? I was in Great Neck for Shabbos on my recruiting trip. And I saw the most unusual thing. I was a Sephardic minion, so maybe it was normal for them. But for me, it was unusual. It was a Persian minion. It was a Persian. And they had towards the end, thank you, Ronan, for hooking it up with me. I appreciate it. I went to the youth minion. And towards the end of davening, and I've never in my life seen this. I'm 43 years old. I've never in my life seen this. I'm about to describe it to you. They had a davening before they put the Torah away. They said Mishra Berach for like the tzibur. And it was like all these young men or children started to walk up to the Torah. And you know what I'm talking about right now? You've seen it before? It's your minion. And they started to touch the Torah, put their hand in the closed Torah. And I look around, like it's like a Pied Piper. And everyone's walking over and putting their hand in the Torah and in this Torah. And then if you could reach the Torah, you put your hand on the guy who's touching the Torah, like Justin Games, like those, you know, tag. And the guy is touching the guy who's touching the guy who's touching the guy who's touching the Torah. And I was like, what is going on here? Never seen it. No, it was already out. It was out. It hadn't been put away yet. Right? So at the end, I asked them, what is that? They're like, it's our shul minhag. So I was thinking to myself, it's so nice. You know, here you are, and you're getting Mishra Berach, and you want to connect the Torah while you're in shul. And some people are touching the Torah to get Mishra Berach for them while touching the Torah. Some guys aren't zochet to touch the guy who's touching the Torah. And then some people aren't zochet for that even the... Then I realized, like, when they leave the shul, they understand they're still touching the Torah. They don't have to leave the Torah. The Torah is there right now, but it's not like a zman when you want to connect the Torah while you're waiting in shul for Mishra Berach. Your entire life you could be touching the Torah if you live to a certain value system. And if you can't touch the Torah, you can touch the guy who's touching the Torah his whole life. It's not a Mishra Berach thing one time a week. When I told this, and then I gave a little shmooze to them as part of my role was speaking at the end of shul. I said, you should know, you don't have to only touch the Torah while you're in shul before you put it back. The Torah is there for you all the time to touch if you wanted to. But many of us aren't interested in that touch. And the truth is, we're going to find out a lot about you in about a week, 2.5 weeks from now. Because nichnas yayin yatzas sod. You're going to drink and you're going to say a lot of things. You're going to do a lot of things. And people are going to film it probably, just so you know. Be aware of that. It's the scariest thing because whatever you're really holding is going to come out in about 2.5 weeks from now. In this room. And then your Ravim's houses the next day. You should be really scared about that. I'm scared. For me and for you. When you drink, it means you don't hold back. Are you ready to have what you're really feeling pop out? You ready for that? Maybe you are. And it's probably, you should just know some people, what they say is unbelievable. They cry. They cry. You'll see it yourself. Why can't I learn more? Why do I not feel Kadosh Baruch Hu in my life? They cry about it. That's where they're holding. And some people don't cry. They make others cry. You should be terrified. You should be terrified what's going to come out. But you have 2.5 weeks to plan for it. You spend 2.5 weeks right now just like working on yourself. Keshron and Nefesh, we're describing this over here, and try to get better. Then you're gonna cry also, for all the right reasons. But if you want to make it like a game, like a New Year's Eve party, then you'll cry after it's over, not while it's happening. The truth will come out, because we're not going to hold back anymore. And to understand that, I want to share with you a story. It happened in my recent recruiting trip also. I've been recruiting for about 15 years. This has never occurred in my life, I've described to you. And I've seen a lot of things, but never this. You heard it already. My Olshan kind of spilled my story before I wanted him to. I don't know why I told the story over. I should never tell him anything anymore. I learned the lesson. It was in a school I was in where I had a lot of interviews already going on that day, and I was happy to end one short if the opportunity would arise. And it did. Because when a kid walked in, I said to him, "What are you looking at? Where you should be applying to?" He listed me 3 yeshivas. I'll mention the name because it's not part of the story, really. It's not so important. I'm looking at Oraita, at Eretz Tzvi, and at Lev HaTorah. I'm sitting here, it's like my 18th interview of the day. I think to myself, this is great. You know, that's fine. You know, I can end this, but I don't be rude. I'm like, Torah Shraga? Like, like, yeah, it's like the next one after us. I'm like, okay, you know, number 4 is not bad, right? I figured, put the interview thing away. Let's just smooth out the yeshivas looking into. I'm not biased. So we got talking about the yeshivas. They're very different from each other. We're smoothing it out a little bit. The end, I say to him after like 5 minutes, okay, well, it's a pleasure meeting with you. Good luck with everything. I said, just keep in mind, I'm really not biased towards this discussion we're having. He's like, come on, Rabbi. You're not biased at all towards Lev HaTorah? So I'm like, because I live nearby and worked there 15 years ago? No, I'm not biased at all but Lev HaTorah. He goes, where do you work? I said, Torah Shraga. He goes to me, oh my gosh, can we start again? I said, what? He goes, the guy before texted me that this was a Lev HaTorah interview. I said, I'm not starting. He said, here's my brochure. Take it with you. Look at it later if you want to call me. I said, they're all great yeshivas. Don't even worry about it at all. Imagine how silly it is. Like, you're in an interview with a guy. You don't know what you're interviewing for. It's ridiculous, right? But picture how ridiculous this is. Right? Here we are right now in a life. We have life. Right? And here we are right now going through a whole 120 years of life. And we're getting all the right answers, right? Got them all. I got this job. Got this lady I'm going to marry. There's a case with my family. I got them all the answers right. And can you imagine as you're about to pass from the world, and then you're like, oh my gosh, like that wasn't what this was for. Can I have a do-over? Can you ask me, can you interview me again? Can you start the process again? Can you imagine how embarrassing that's going to be? And when you're told no, here's my brochure of what life was supposed to be like. It's called the Torah. Could you imagine how silly you're going to feel? Then what? It's true, you have great things going on. So much exciting things. Your favorite team is in the playoff hunt. Could you imagine that? This might be the year they take it. Who cares if 5 years from now? That's what you spent your yeshiva time focused on? That's the wrong answer to the question. My bubby, is in a stage called transition stage. You ever heard it beforehand? It means, I looked it up online, a medical term. It means you're transitioning from life to death. It's a very strange description to give a medical term. If your car was breaking down, you wouldn't say it's in transition stage to like being here and then not working. It's called it's breaking down. Who calls it transition? It's a medical term. It's not a religious thing. Transition stage? Why is that a stage? It's dying. She's still alive. She's a very good life. So my mom told me that she said recently, I'm ready to go home. Our truth is not so lucid, so you say things that don't make so much sense sometimes. I'm ready to go home. It's like the medrash we talk about. It's in the neshama. It's put in a body, and it's just here for a little bit of time. Then it goes home. She's transitioning to the next stage. It's not death. It's this body that's been holding her is ready to give her back. This is not what we are. It's not about what we eat. It's not about our physical pleasures. It's not where it's at. This is just holding you. It's your interview stage. You're trying to work on your neshama, not your goof. Goof is part of it. It's definitely part of it. But if that's where you're holding right now in life, if that's your decision-making process, what gives my goof the most enjoyment, the most pleasure, you have all the answers wrong. And you'll transition yourself at some point in time. We all, it's what we're here for. Vayakel Pekudei is how we end off Sefer Shmos. But it's such a strange way to end off. We just had this by Truma Tetzave. It's the same discussion. Anyone that's trying to Mikra knows there's so few Rashis because it's almost the exact same story already. Why are we having a repeat? And I heard one time a Pshat named Aaron Lichtenstein that in the middle of those two was the Egel Azav. The Egel Azav is a moment in time when we blew it badly. And it's so easy to say, you know what? I had a gift of the Mishkan and all these things, and then I messed up so badly. You must give up on me, God. You must have given up on me. I have nothing left. And Hashem gives you right back the same parshios. You have a Yaakov Pekuda. You're back. You feel bad about it. You want to get better. Take it. Take it back. Come back. You're invited to come back again. You could have a miserable X amount of time in yeshiva, out of yeshiva. Just come back. Just here, here's my hand. Just come right back. Join me. You could have a miserable 17 years, and you know you have a great yeshiva experience. It's all different. It's all different. My goof has been my priority in my life. But what am I doing it for? For what? So one time I transition into a state when I can't function anymore. So my cheshbon nefesh is no longer about how much money I can make, but how much I can build my neshama up. For people say to me, my year's over. I blew it already. I can't do mornings. It's not my thing. Maybe that's your body talking. That's not who you are. And the medicine knows it. The transition. You're transitioning from state to state. Death is just a different state of who you're going to be. It's where your neshama is holding. Your neshama now. It's not your body anymore. And that's sad. That is sad. But you're still just as there, just not in the same container it used to be in. But this is your interview right now. You're interviewing for a position in Shemayim. And you have many yeshivas you can go to. One's called Gehenim, one's called Gan Eden, and it's your choice. And you can always decide differently. It's up to you. There's never a time when it's over. As long as you have a life, the interview is still going, and you can always change it up. And what better time to change than being in Eretz Yisrael? No worries. No family to be concerned about right now. No children to support. And it's just you figuring it out. And with one last story I'll end with. There's one time, it's a mushroom I don't think it's ever happened. I hope it didn't happen. There was a person one time, there was a small town that raised enough money to support, to buy a Sefer Torah, the first one in the town that they had. Story told about Pesach Kron. Finally, after buying a Sefer Torah, they wanted to have the opportunity to make a mantle, a covering for the Sefer Torah. They went around and they told all the people in the community who ever wanted to, were having a big showdown next week, the nicest cover will be used to house the Sefer Torah. Many women got together and separated and stitched and sewed these beautiful Sefer Torah, and they went to see how would theirs fare. And some older lady, a 65-year-old grandma, her beautiful scarlet colored Torah scroll cover was selected among all the others as the one that would be danced with the Sefer Torah to its first sitting in the Aron Kodesh, in that community. And she brought her whole family for this big occasion to have them put on the Sefer Torah cover. As they placed it on the Sefer Torah, it didn't fit. It was too tight. I tried maneuvering it this way, that way, it wouldn't fit. And it was like embarrassing for everyone, especially her and her family, waiting to watch her beautiful Sefer Torah cover be danced with the Sefer Torah. After a minute or two trying, it was like everyone was like murmuring around themselves, what am I going to do? So they say to her, I'm terribly sorry, but this just doesn't fit. They have to go to the second place runner-up, mantle to dance it in. And I'm like, she's heartbroken. She says, oh, I have a great idea. No, don't yet. Don't. I have a good idea. Just cut some of the pages out. Make it smaller. It'll fit. Just cut pages out and stick it back on again. This has to be on top of the scroll. That's how the story ended. The cover is much more important than the scroll, right? Got to be danced with my cover on top of it. Okay, a parchment here missing, a parchment there missing. It's okay. It's got the cover that I made on it. You have a very difficult time ahead of us because we live in a crazy world and there's so much to enjoy. But you have two choices. You embrace this physical body that we have that's holding something. And we spend our lives interviewing for that success. I want to be the best looking guy, have the best looking wife, have the most beautiful job, have the nicest car, have the nicest home. And then you aced your interview if that's what it was about. You aced it. But if it's not about that, and when the time comes, and we're going to have our transition stage, and it starts to break down on us, and then the real you is left. You might have failed your interview. You have 1 month of being in yeshiva until break. It's 1 month left. You could pass it and you can excel. But how could you want to be the same person that you were when you came in here? Nowhere in life would you be satisfied with being the same as you were 6 months ago. Except for religion for some of you. Tversky said last night, and I end with his line, you can never attain what you don't think you can attain. You can never attain what you don't think you can attain. If you limit yourself what you can do, then you're stuck. You're stuck. But if you have heights and you have dreams and you understand what you're interviewing for, then the sky's the limit. We should have a exciting month left. 2.5 weeks of building up so that when the truth of us comes out, we have what to be proud of. Have a good day.